ever wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
You know, we've had some negative stories, a few negative stories over the past couple of weeks. I am so tired of negative stories when we're talking about wine, because wine should always be happy. It should always put a warm feeling in your belly. And I can't think of anything that puts a warmer feeling in your belly than a type of wine that I think most wine lovers are not very familiar with. But if you're from Missouri, they will show you. It is mead wine. And nobody knows more about mead wine than our friend Dwight Crevelt at Seven Seas Winery. Dwight, welcome from Walnut Grove, Missouri.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Hey, you got the Mead Festival coming on.
Yes, we do. It's our 7th annual Mead Fest in September.
Let's first talk about mead wine from the standpoint of public acceptance. Now, I know that in Missouri and other parts of the country, you know, mead is a way of life. But when you get into California and places where there are more, and I'm just using this word humorously, more sophisticated wine drinkers, they scoff at such things, right?
Well, sort of, but we find a lot of them still like mead. Mead, of course, is wine made from honey.
Right.
And several people can do it in a beer style, so you actually have beers made in that style, but we do it in a traditional wine style, and we find it's very, very popular. We've got 13 different varieties right now.
Now, how do you make 13 different varieties of mead? How's that work exactly?
Well, honey takes on the flavor of where the beehives are located and
right.
the flowers they're collecting.
Right.
So if it's in an orange grove, it's an orange blossom honey. If it's in an alfalfa field, it's an alfalfa
right.
honey, or clover, wildflower. So when we get those varieties of honey, they have a unique flavor, and they make a unique flavored wine.
So what percentage of the wine actually is the honey? I mean, because honey is a precious commodity, for sure.
In our varietal meads, like our wildflower, our clover, our alfalfa, it's 100% honey. We take the honey, and it's normally at 80-some percent sugar. We dilute that down to around 24, which is where your grape juice normally is. Throw in the yeast and ferment it, and that's it. That's 100% honey. There's nothing else added to those.
Okay, so this makes a lot of sense. The percentage of sugar that goes in is the same percentage that goes in with grapes. So if you have the perception that mead is going to be like over-the-top sweet, not necessarily so.
Not necessarily so. It can be made dry, sweet, anywhere in between, just like a regular grape wine.
How do people prefer it?
Most of them prefer it in a semi-sweet variety.
Semi-sweet. Okay. So how much residual sugar are we talking about? Do you know?
We're talking about 4%.
4%. So that's like a dessert wine.
Some dessert wines, yes.
Just south of a dessert wine, then.
Because a lot of dessert wines have as much as 8 or 10%.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and a higher alcohol, because we keep everything in 11, 12% range, and kind of like the old Rieslings used to be, and not quite as sweet as your Moscatos tend to be nowadays.
So talk to me about the availability of honey in Missouri, because I know in other parts of the country, there have been some real tragedies where honey production has been concerned in the past couple of years, especially where there have been droughts. Are you experiencing that, or is it just the same?
No, we've experienced a little bit of it, but we deal with a lot of local beekeepers and some fairly large ones here in the state, because we buy our honey in 55-gallon drums.
Wow.
A lot of honey. But we haven't had the big issue with the lack of honey that you see in a lot of areas, because a lot of the big bee loss has been from the big guys with the semis going from orchard to orchard to orchard. They're just delivering these things and running back and forth. They're not the real beekeepers. So by the time they find that they've had a problem with the hives, it's already got through half of them.
Yeah.
Or more. The guys here that have the hives in permanent locations, know where they're at, and are not traveling all over the world with them, they keep an eye on them, and if they see a problem, they pick it up right away and take care of it.
Oh, that's good.
So we've had a a lot less problems, but there's a lot more people buying it and using it. I mean, when I started making this, there were like 90 of us in the country making mead on a full-time basis. Now there's over 200.
So what do you attribute that popularity to?
It's a resurgence in the idea. People are looking for something different, especially in the millennials, the younger generation. They don't care what their parents said. They don't care what a critic said. They're more concerned about experiencing it themselves, tasting the best for themselves, and finding out and listening what their friends say. They're the ones that have brought on this huge coffee creation with, you know, 5 million different coffee types out
there. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing in the world of wine and mead.
I love the way you put it. They don't care what their parents think. They don't care what anybody thinks.
Exactly.
Perfect description of the millennials.
It's an exact description, and they're very popular, and we've found it's growing even more with regular wine drinkers also. We have a common crowd out here that comes out all the time, a very loyal group, and we've got a very loyal group of mead drinkers.
Yeah. So, and let's talk about out there for a second. We're talking about Seven Seas Winery in Walnut Grove, Missouri, and you make all kinds of things there. You make grape wines, of course, too, right?
Right. Yeah, we have 20-some different wines at any given moment.
Wow.
We do grape wines from dry to sweet, again, and everywhere in between.
And so how many people will come to the 7th Annual Mead Fest on September 25th. That's what I really wanted to talk about because I got this press release from you. By the way, you've been inundating me with press releases. You've got so many things going on out there in Missouri.
Well, we try to keep busy. Mead Fest is our biggest event of the year. We'll have at least 600 to 700 people out here that afternoon.
Wow.
And we have all the medieval recreators come out in the sword fights and the archery, and we have a bird of prey demonstration. We have the belly dancers out here. We have period music. It's just a fun festival. We have a lot of people coming costume. So it's just a great day, kind of a little mini Renaissance festival.
And it's just a one-day event.
Just a one-day event, another event.
So what's the weather like around the end of September in Missouri?
Usually pretty good. It's a nice fall weather. It may be, you know, in the high 70s, low 80s maybe if we get a nice breeze. It's just perfect. They can dress up in these costumes and not be dying.
Yeah. When is your hottest month in Missouri?
Now.
Now?
July and August are typically our hottest months. Like for the last month here and stuff, we've been off and on from 80-degree days to 100-degree days. It's been really weird.
You got nothing on us. In California, it's been in our wine countries, gosh, you know, climbing up to 110 lately. But you got something that we don't have. It's called humidity.
Yes, it is. And it makes it a whole lot different. 100 degrees here is like 120
yeah,
out there.
Definitely. Definitely. So Mead Festival. Then a little bit earlier in the month, you've got the 3rd annual Missouri State Dutch Oven Championship.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Well, Dutch oven cooking is a very popular pastime, and several organizations around the state, the International Dutch Oven Society, is actually located in Utah, and there's governing bodies for all of these organizations, and this is the state championship cook-off, and it's sanctioned by the IDOS, which is the International Dutch Oven Society in Utah, and so the winner here would obviously be qualified to go to one of their national events out there, and there's a lot of these going on. This 3rd annual one is being held in Missouri. This is the first year we've had it at the winery.
What is typical Dutch oven food fare?
Dutch oven, you can cook just about anything in a Dutch oven that you want. The competition requires them to do an entree, a bread, and a dessert for the adults, and the youth will just do an entree and a dessert.
How fun.
And you can have cakes, you can have pies, you name it, anything we've had people cook.
Now, you're pairing wine with that, right?
Yeah, wines go very well with them, and we put the wines together with them, and we have a nice crowd comes out and watches them cook, and then once judging is over with, they all get the taste.
That's fantastic.
And it's a fundraising event, and all the funds go to support the local food backpack program here in Walnut Grove.
Yeah, and then you got some other stuff coming up in October. You have the Ash Grove Backroads to Main Street Heritage Festival. I don't think that's your event, right? But they took advantage of your press list.
Yes, they do. I'm also on the board of the Historic Town Center Committee over there. And
it's awesome.
Another nonprofit. This is designed to help restore, rebuild, and put Main Street America back on its feet.
Awesome. Hey, listen.
It's a festival that does that.
I think I'm coming to the Mead Festival. Let me just say that.
That would be great.
I've been threatening, for 5 years to come out there to one of your events?
Sooner or later.
I think I'm going to come to the Mead Festival. Will you save a place for me?
Absolutely.
All right. It sounds good. Hey, listen, Dwight, we got to run. But for people who want more information about the Mead Festival, the Ash Grove Backroads to Main Street Heritage Festival, or the Dutch Oven Competition, which sounds really good on September 10th, more information on your website, right?
Yes, everything is on our website and our Facebook page, 7cswinery.com, using number 7, not not the letter, or not using the number, not then spelling it out. And SevenSeasWinery.com, and we also have Facebook is the same way, SevenSeasWinery.com.
Yeah, so just check it out. They always have fun there. I've seen so much come out of the events there, and it looks like an absolute gas. So we always want to tell people about what's going on in the Show Me State, and always happy to hear from Dwight Crivelt from Seven Seas, doing amazing stuff, amazing wines, amazing meads, amazing guy. That's it.
Thanks, super.
Dwight, you're always the best, man.
Super. Thank you.
I love it.
Glad to be here.
All right. We're going to continue on with Grape Encounters in just a second and maybe show you how, if you want to be like Dwight and get into the grape growing business, how you can come up with that cash for it. How about that, Dwight?
That's a good one.
That's coming up next on Grape Encounters.
Unpretentious, unconventional, and uncorked. This is Grape Encounters Radio.
A few days ago, a listener visited our wine bar, the Grape Encounters Emporium, because he wanted to see for himself if the wines from Cardella that I brag about all the time are as good as I keep telling all of you. He had driven quite a long distance to check out the Cardella wines, so we were delighted to let him sample them all. When he was most of the way through the tasting, I asked him if I had oversold these wines in any way. He smiled and replied, "Absolutely not. I can't recall any winery blowing my mind with virtually every wine they make." But after watching literally hundreds of faces light up after the first sip, I can tell you without any reservation that I believe Cardella is poised to be the next great American cult winery. Extraordinary whites, incomparable reds, insanely great values. I love Cardella's wines, and you will too. Learn how to get yours online at grapeencounters.com. For years, I've been dying to get a truly exceptional wine refrigerator to keep my liquid assets safe from the scorching summer heat that can turn awesome wine into teardrops. Heat is the number one enemy of fine wine, and collectors will tell you that a wine cellar is absolutely essential. Well, that's just not true. For a tiny fraction of the cost to build even a modest cellar in a converted closet, you can own a wine refrigeration unit so exceptional and so beautiful that you'll want to show it off to absolutely everyone. My unit is truly the best there is. It's from King's Bottle, the experts in wine preservation and cooling. King's Bottle has wine refrigerators for every need. They're gorgeous to look at and priced lower than you would ever imagine. Want to see why I'm so excited? Click the King's Bottle link at grapeencounters.com. King's Bottle wine refrigerators are so cool. See them at grapeencounters.com.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
With your weekly Grape Encounter, and now we're going to change gears. We're always talking about wine from the consumer standpoint, but there's a lot of interesting stuff that is going on behind the scenes to make sure that industries like the wine industry thrive and that the people who are involved in these industries have the money and the wherewithal to be able to do the things that they dream about doing. I recently learned about a program and an organization that is doing some amazing things. I know we have a lot of winemakers that listen to this show. I know we have a lot of people from the wine industry that follow Grape Encounters. We're going to talk about something that I think is super interesting. And I think from the consumer standpoint, even if this doesn't immediately affect you, I think you're also going to find it interesting, and it's probably going to put a smile on your face that there are organizations out there that are doing the kinds of things that we're going to talk about today. Having said that, I want to introduce two guests that I have today. The first one is Woody Tash. He is the author of Slow Money, Investing as if Food, Farms, and Fertility Mattered. And the other guest that I have in the studio today is Jeff Wade, and he is a local chapter director for the organization. So let me welcome them both. First of all, Woody, welcome to Grape Encounters Radio.
Hi, David.
Man, very excited to have you, and very excited to also welcome Jeff.
Thank you, David.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit today about something we don't talk about on Grape Encounters too much. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes where agriculture and food is concerned, and a lot of it doesn't get talked about, but you are part of an interesting and growing way that things get done and that people who have dreams to do new and exciting things that enables them to do it. Let's talk about, first of all, where Slow Money came from and what it means, Woody.
Well, before I say something about that, I just want to say I love the way you framed it, you know, enabling people in the food business to follow their dreams and grow their business. And obviously to do that, you know, the first thing you want to see is consumer demand. And I think we're kind of getting there. There are all kinds of indicators that more and more consumers are moving in the direction of sustainable, local, organic, et cetera, et cetera. The question is, where do the businesses get the capital to grow? And despite all that consumer demand, it's still very hard for small food enterprises to get financing for a whole bunch of reasons that if you know anything about finance, you just kind of shake your head and say, yep, that's the way it is.
If somebody wanted to start a vineyard, and we have this happen, by the way, Woody, all the time, people who listen to this show end up starting vineyards and become vineyard owners. And some people have money and some people don't. But when they don't and you want to start a vineyard, you want to, or at least make wine, it's a huge amount of money and it's not known for being super profitable. So banks are...
Yeah, why the hell are we all doing this?
Because we like wine. That's why. That's why we're doing it. So it's, yeah. And I guess that's true in any aspect of the agriculture industry. It's like, wait a second, farmers lose money like mad. You know, farmers
right.
are a dying breed. Why should we give them money that they're going to just throw away by working 24
yep.
hours a day?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, look, you've just crystallized the whole cultural challenge. You know, I haven't met too many people who say we want fewer small farmers in our community, or in your case, you know, we don't want any vineyards in our neighborhood, or we don't want to have a tasting room in our county. You know, it's
right.
People want these things. And as I was saying before, one way you can get them is to support them with your consumer dollars. But if you think about it for a minute, you realize they also need investment capital. But that's only part of the equation. The other part that we're coming from is we want to take some of our money out of Wall Street and out of the kind of crazy shenanigans that are going on that we don't really understand, whether you call them derivatives or rogue algorithms or smokestacks in China or however you think about all that. And so taking some of our money out of there, on the one hand, reducing the harm it's doing there, and then spending the time and energy to put it to work locally, you know, in a food enterprise near where we live is a very, very satisfying thing.
Wait a second, Woody, I'm going to give you a hallelujah. Hang on.
I can't say anything after hallelujah. I'm done.
No, you can't. You didn't expect the hallelujah chorus to chime in, did you?
No.
But anyway, it's so exciting, I think. The world that we're living in, other than politics, but the world that we are living in is amazing because people have learned 50 different ways to prepare kale and the consumers want it. And so there's all these new exotic – they're not new. These groceries out there that are being grown, produce and fruit that nobody's ever eaten before that are being integrated into exciting foods. And you can even go to a place like, heaven forbid, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but you can go to a Trader Joe's and find really delicious food that's made with local products and helping farmers to explore and popularize, I guess is the right word, things that we wouldn't normally eat. And that's exciting to me.
But, you know, when you're talking about wine and vineyards, I think more so than in most of the other sectors, well, I guess you could say in any orchard-oriented, you know, food enterprise where you're talking about things that last over generations. It's a chance to think long-term. So what you just said is, yes, people are getting more and more religion, if we can go back to the hallelujah moment there, about getting more local food. But it's the people who are tending the soil for the benefit of future generations who really need our support. This isn't just about what we can take off the table. And I say the table, meaning the financial table and the food table. It's not just about what we can do right now for ourselves. It's how do we somehow shift gears from a very short-term oriented culture to a longer-term, more sustainable culture.
But I think in general that people have become way more health conscious. They've become way more artisan product conscious. And I think to the work that you're doing, people are certainly interested in locally grown. That's a big deal. So one of the things that I find really interesting about the wine business is how much more wine today is being sold out of the tasting room, where people want to come and experience the environment within which the wine is made, and then buy that wine and take that wine home as sort of a microcosm of the place that they just visited, which in fact the wine is. It is representative
of that
place.
I'm not trying to always go back to the same note, but I do. For me, everything you just said is part of the same macro thing. People want to reconnect with one another, the places where they live, which is what you just said. And when you go to a vineyard, if you're in a tasting room and you see the vines outside, you don't need someone to explain to you that this is something that takes place over many, many years and that lots of care is there. And it all contributes, not just about the taste that you're getting on your tongue. It's the whole experience of where this is coming from and the care with which it's made. And that, again, that's a big cultural shift. It doesn't just apply to wine. It applies to pretty much everything.
Yeah,
I would say if you just make the leap and then think about where your money is invested and think how completely disconnected that process is from the kind of care and long-term thinking that's in the vineyard, and you kind of see where what the challenge is.
Yeah, for Pete's sake, we eat Chilean sea bass. We care that it's from Chile. If it was, you know, some other place, we might not like it as much. All right, we're going to have to take a little break here. We are talking to Woody Tash. He is the author of Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money. You know, how do you take local money that might have gone into Wall Street and put it into the production of food, or put it into various aspects of the food industry? Because we may not agree on a lot of things, but one thing is certain, we all got to eat. And definitely want to take this conversation in the direction of wine, because it turns out that wine is no longer a luxury, it's a necessity. Just look at all the health benefits of wine. So we'll come back in just a second, talk more with Woody Tash, and we also have in the studio Jeff Wade. We're going to get a local's perspective from Jeff in just a second when we return with Grape Encounters Radio.
You'll find Grape Encounters Radio located at the corner of Fermented and Demented. You do have a GPS, don't you?
Yeah, wise guy, eh?
For years, I seem to pour more wine down the drain than into my glass. I love great wine, but hate how quickly it goes bad. Now, for about the cost of a few good bottles, I pour as much as I want of whatever I want, whenever I want, with my Coravin from GrapeEncounters.com. Take a sip today, have a glass next month, and save the rest for a few years without removing the cork. Enjoy wine on your own terms with the remarkable Coravin from GrapeEncounters.com.
A lot of people ask me why Manzanita Manor's incredible Portuguese dessert wine is called Two Horse. Well, the reason behind the name is as extraordinary as the wine itself. It's because the owner and winemaker at Manzanita Manor Organics actually uses two beautiful horses to pull the plow on her farmland. When you take your very first sip of the Two Horse Vineyard's irresistible dessert wine, you'll immediately experience the winemaker's unparalleled connection to the land. It's what really makes it so good. You can purchase this exceptional wine online, as well as their purely delicious walnut oil, 100% organic heirloom walnuts, and free trade chocolate-covered walnuts. To learn more about all the Manzanita Manor Organics products, visit mmorganics.com. You can order all their walnut products there, and bottles of Two Horse, of course. Purchase and shipping subject to state and local regulations. Please see mmorganics.com for more information. Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me, or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook, or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
Now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
Get tougher as their lives keep getting harder. I think it's time we all thank a farmer.
We are back with Grape Encounters, and so glad to be doing the socially responsible thing today, talking about, you know, some of the behind-the-curtain things that happen in not just the wine industry, but other aspects of the food industry. In the studio with me today is Jeff Wade. He actually runs a local chapter of Slow Money Slow, and we'll re-explain what that means in just a second. So I wanted to get a local perspective from him because he's my neighbor. And then we have on the line and really excited to have author Woody Tash. More than an author, he wrote the book Slow Money. It was forwarded by Carlo Petrini. It's really about investing in the food community, the agricultural community, all aspects of it in your area, using local money to make local successes. And I mentioned Carlo Petrini, Woody. Tell me the story about how he became famous, because I love it.
Well, we're talking about an Italian born, bred in northern Italy, about 30 miles from Turin. And it's kind of a famous story now in slow food circles. But when McDonald's opened in Rome in 1989, Carlo protested and said, "We want slow food, not fast food." And the phrase just stuck. And, you know, now he's got an international NGO that has 100,000 members in 100 countries.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you guys assess for me how much the industry has changed since you've been doing this? I'm not giving you credit for it completely, but you are part of a trend, that is for certain.
Jeff, you want me to take this first?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, when you say the industry, you're talking about the food industry.
In general, yeah.
And within it, the wine industry. And when I hear industry, I think about those two connected to the financial services industry and the social investment movement. And they're both tracking kind of in similar ways, that it's just over the last 20 or 30 years, I'd say it's very clear that millions of people, this is a soft number, but how many millions we don't know, but millions of people are realizing that moving in the direction of industrialized, commoditized things, in the case of the food industry, of shelf-stable, cheap things, and that's called the food industry, and it's been extremely successful in filling our supermarkets with shelf-stable, cheap things. But when you get into the social, environmental, nutritional, all the other aspects of food production, and millions of people are now realizing that that system, while it's very successful in doing certain things, is not very good in many other ways. So that's the food industry part. All the CSAs, the farmers markets, the percentage of local food that you can, you know, you now see trumpeted in Kroger's and Whole Foods and many, many retail outlets now. It's all a response to that. I'll just say, you know, super fast, the same thing has happened in terms of the growth of assets under management in what are called triple bottom line or impact investing or socially responsible investment funds.
But God forbid, you know, people should have to chop their own zucchini. I mean, you know, first it was the supermarket chopping the zucchini for you and charging you four times as much. And then it was Trader Joe's selling the zucchini cooked for you for, you know, six times as much. You know, on one hand, we've become much more conscientious about what we put in our stomach with that bent towards local. But on the other hand, boy, have we become lazy.
Well, you're touching on too many aspects of that to almost respond to. Yes, as a society, we expect things to be just, you know, push button, fast, click here, click there. Information is super fast. Investing is super fast. And, you know, our response to food is similar. This is why Michael Pollan's book, Cooked, is so interesting, you know, where he just really focused on the act of cooking in your home as a kind of cultural act. And, you know, he evokes it really beautifully, all the reasons why it's important.
Jeff, throw out some examples for me of how this works on the local level. And again, Jeff Wade, head of the San Luis Obispo County chapter in California of Slow Money. And again, we are talking to Jeff and Woody Tash, author of Slow Money. And Woody is, gosh, Woody, you're going to get mad at me for saying this, but he's kind of a god in this industry, because there are actually lots of people that are doing this, but it's so exciting to see people that are, you know, looking away from Wall Street and looking out across the vineyards, looking out across the rows of broccoli, and finding better ways to use their investors' money. And that's what this is all about. It's called Slow Money, and investing in slow food, the opposite of fast food. So, Jeff, ideas.
Thanks,
or examples.
David. Well, our mission, which is very similar to other groups around the country, is to support the sustainable growth of small businesses, which benefit the local food economy and and the health of Slo County. And certainly that includes the beverage industry, whether it be a winemaker or a hard cider maker. You know, many of these local winemakers that have done very well started out just buying grapes from someone, making their own wine in the Garagista group, perhaps. And then they need to grow to the point where, oh, I need a tasting room. And that's a big leap. So one of the aspects of what we do is coach and network, but also do peer-to-peer lending. So for instance, a Garagista winemaker may say, look, I'm making a couple of barrels now, but I need to go to five. I need, you know, some advanced funding for the bottling. And, you know, it's going to be a while before I get my money back when I sell it through my club. And so we try to fill that gap that is between, let's say, the crowdfunding and the traditional lending, for which these folks and many food businesses don't qualify for.
So let me ask Woody this question. When somebody is hearing this on the radio and says, gosh, you know what? I've always wanted to be in the wine business, but maybe I should just put my money into somebody else's efforts. Could they do that? How would they do that? There's somebody in Missouri right now that's listening and going, you know what? I got an extra 50 grand that I could put into somebody's business and enjoy watching them grow and prosper. And I'm guessing that happens all the time. What do you do with that money when somebody does call? And they will call.
Sure. I wish I could snap my fingers and say, yes, we've got several groups in every county or in every state of the United States, but we don't. You know, we're still early at this, and I hopefully a generation from now, the system will be much more robust. But to give you a very specific answer, when people call us, we refer them to the closest group. So if someone's from Missouri, I'd refer them to a group in Lawrence, Kansas. That might be the closest. And if you're in Vermont, we have people in Vermont. We have people in Maine. We have people in North Carolina, Vancouver, San Francisco, down your way. You know, so we have folks around, but there's a lot of territory between our folks.
What if somebody that was a long ways away from one of your groups still wanted to invest? Would you be willing to talk to them if they wanted to invest in, let's say, California wine? Would there be a conversation, or would we simply just say you're too far away?
No, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we're trying to help, let's say, nurture this activity any which way we can. So I always try to make time for serious inquiries. But the one thing we're doing that right now, let's say, can be useful to such a soul is every few years we put on what we call a national gathering, you know, a big meeting somewhere. They've been moving around the country. The last one was in Louisville. The next one coming up is going to be in Boulder next year. And these are a few years apart. These events are pretty big. Jeff has been to them. They tend to be around 800 people. You know, we've had people from 46 states, and maybe we're up to 8 or 9 countries come to these things over the last 7 or 8 years. We've done 5 of them over that period. So those are the times when people who really want to kind of learn more and have a kind of an immersion experience for a couple of days with people from all over the country. And at those meetings, we have, I would say, serious thought leaders, everyone from Wendell Berry. Of course, there's nobody but him and his little iconic place in our little pantheon. But people on the sustainable ag side, farmers, financiers, people from, you know, firms like Clean Yield and Trillium Asset Management and RSF Social Finance, a lot of the professionals who are moving into the space. And we do feature occasionally some funds. So Iroquois Valley Farm or Farmland LP, groups that are creating diversified, professionally managed portfolios do come and participate in these things. And sometimes we feature
it them. Seems like a great opportunity. Jeff, what do you got?
Well, after 8 years of Slo Money operating and growing groups around the country, there are a lot of people that have done this in many ways, and they're out there to help support people maybe out in a rural area where there's no group, to start their own group, and they would get something off the ground, and then others would follow.
And it's all about food. It doesn't necessarily be, you don't need to necessarily be in an agricultural area, right?
Absolutely.
It's the food industry in general.
Food industry, yeah. Value-added products made from agricultural products.
Got it. Hey, guys, such a pleasure to have you on. I can't thank you enough. Jeff, thank you for being here. It's nice to have you working in the nearby neighborhood, so thank you for that.
My pleasure, David.
And Woody, I'm going to be excited to actually go to one of your events that are taking place near where I live. So I will see you in just about a month and look forward to
it. You will. I look forward to meeting you face to face.
Oh, definitely. And I'm going to see about, because I'm in the food industry indirectly because I have a radio show. So I need you to invest in this show.
Hey, forget it. We're crazy, but we're not that crazy.
Okay. All right. Hey, what a pleasure to have on the line Woody Tash, the author of Slow Money. If anybody knows anything about this kind of investing, Woody is the one. You can pick up the book. Where, guys? I forgot to ask that.
Well, it can be ordered through your local bookstore if they don't have it on the shelf.
Okay. All right. Or can they go to a website and get it?
Chelsea Green Publishing in Vermont has a website. You can order it directly from them.
Okay. Chelsea Green Publishing, but very interesting stuff and some very, very different kind of thinking. And anyway, I appreciate you guys being on. We will be back with more Grape Encounters right after this.
Connecting winemakers, wine lovers, wine adventures, and all things wine from around the globe. You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson, broadcasting from our wine cellar studio in idyllic Atascadero, centrally located in the Central Coast wine country of San Luis Obispo County, California.
We like to talk about wine.
Grape Encounters Radio is based in Atascadero, California for good reason. It's the heart of the Central Coast wine country and the perfect home base for endless adventures. Atascadero is friendly, affordable, and offers unparalleled access to world-class equestrian ranches, bicycle trails, hiking, breathtaking beaches, cutting-edge culinary experiences, and endless wine country adventures. Learn more about Atascadero, the gateway to good times, at visitatascadero.com.
For years, I've been dying to get a truly exceptional wine refrigerator to keep my liquid assets safe from the scorching summer heat that can turn awesome wine into teardrops. Heat is the number one enemy of fine wine, and collectors will tell you that a wine cellar is absolutely essential. Well, that's just not true. For a tiny fraction of the cost to build even a modest cellar in a converted closet, you can own a wine refrigeration unit so exceptional and so beautiful that you'll want to show it off to absolutely everyone. My unit is truly the best there is. It's from King's Bottle, the experts in wine preservation and cooling. King's Bottle has wine refrigerators for every need. They're gorgeous to look at and priced lower than you would ever imagine. Want to see why I'm so excited? Click the King's Bottle link at grapeencounters.com. King's Bottle wine refrigerators are so cool. See them at grapeencounters.com.
For years, I seem to pour more wine down the drain than into my glass. I love great wine, but hate how quickly it goes bad. Now, for about the cost of a few good bottles, I pour as much as I want of whatever I want, whenever I want, with my Coravin from grapeencounters.com. Take a sip today, have a glass next month, and save the rest for a few years without removing the cork. Enjoy wine on your own terms with the remarkable Coravin from grapeencounters.com.
She once described a wine as a dusty old trunk from the attic, and we were all glad she was doing the sipping. It's Sipping with Sarah with Sunset Magazine's Sarah Schneider on Grape Encounters Radio.
'Cause when you're high on that homemade wine, every woman will sure look fine.
We are back with Grape Encounters Radio and another edition of Stump the Sarah.
Oh, I thought it was Sipping with Sarah.
Oh, no, we changed it, Sarah. I have a bottle of wine here. I'm sitting across the table from the inimitable Sarah Schneider, wine editor of Sunset Magazine, one of the most beloved wine writers on planet Earth.
Oh, you're good to
no,
me.
People That's love fair. You. You're the people's wine writer. You realize
well,
that, right?
Well, wine is for the people.
I know, but the language gets just a little stuffy in most wine publications for the average Joe.
I suppose
And then you
true.
Lose them, right?
You know, I can geek out too, but then I have to pull myself off the cliff, back from the brink, and say, it's just a beverage.
Well,
pretty fun beverage.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun beverage. But yeah, you're right. And I think that the lion's share of the public would like us to spend, us meaning you, me, and everybody else that's writing about wine, I think they'd much rather hear us say, here's a wine you should look out for, or a type of wine that you should look out for. Enjoy it because it's crazy delicious.
That's true.
One of the first questions I ever asked you some years ago was, I said, do you prefer to describe a wine as having hints of leather and cassis and dark fruit or whatever, or would you prefer to just be able to say it's yummy? Do you remember what your answer was?
I'm hoping it was yummy.
Yeah, yeah. That was your answer, and that was a good answer. Okay. All right. So let's go back to this little entry that I have put in front of you.
Okay.
So talk to me about it now. And let me explain why I did this, by the way, because this wine is, I think, something a little different or a lot different than what we normally talk about. I didn't mean for it to be a way to embarrass you, because I would think that probably 99 out of 100 people would not get this one.
Okay. You'll see if I'm in the 99.
Well, let's just see
one.
Tell me your observations, and then I want to tell people why they should be looking for this.
Okay.
Okay.
Actually, this is a really good thing for me to be doing. I love this. I don't know anything about this wine.
It's red, Sarah.
It's red. I can see that it's red. So it's a chance to actually not have any preconceived notions. I don't know that that is Syrah or Pinot Noir. And so I'm looking for the general personality of the wine.
Do you like it?
Yes.
You do like it.
I do like this wine.
I would really probably not bring a bottle of wine in here that you wouldn't like. I just couldn't do that.
So I have no reference points for this wine. I can't pick out that it's one variety. So I'm guessing maybe it's a blend. But it has the body almost leaning towards lighter-bodied Pinot Noir, but it doesn't have the character of a pure Pinot Noir. It's almost earthy, dusty, like an Italian variety would be. And it has a fair amount of acidity.
Sarah?
Yeah?
What did you just say?
An Italian variety?
Did you peek when I used the restroom on the break?
I did not. You know I would not do that.
All right, I'll give it to you. No, I'm just kidding you. Sarah, I'm kidding you. But from here or from over there?
I need another sip.
This is one of the few jobs that you can have that in order to do your job well, you have to continue to drink.
So what's in my head right now with that question is it about earth or is it about fruit? That's kind of my old world, new world distinction. And this actually tastes of some sweet, warm fruit. And so I would actually say this is California, maybe an Italian variety from California.
So your observation was spectacular, but incorrect. Okay. But are you ready for me to disclose?
Absolutely.
Let's
reveal.
And would you please tell listeners the pathetic way that I have disguised this bottle with all of the wine accessories that I have? I grabbed this and wrapped it up this way.
So he has this bottle disguised in a sunset jute bag, which I love. The wine is now in a sunset context.
Yes. Okay. So I think I'm going to give Sarah both a great thrill and a big wow.
So?
Read them and weep, baby.
I was right and I was wrong.
Well, you were right and you were right, if you ask me.
That's a good spin.
Because when you said that lushness of warm fruit, there is an explanation as to why you have that in this wine. So let's just tell them what you got in your hand now.
I have a bottle of Valpolicella Ripasso in my hand, and it is from Villa Borghetti in Italy. And tell us why it has that warm, sweet fruit in it.
It has that warm, sweet fruit because this Ripasso process makes for some very delicious but also very expensive wines. And that's because they take the fruit and they divide it up into, let's say, two equal amounts of fruit. But half of that fruit gets dried down, and they let a lot of the moisture evaporate from the fruit. The word Ripasso simply means to pass through. So they take the juice, the part that wasn't dried down, and they pass it through this very intensified, I don't like to call them raisins. I like to call them sun-dried tomatoes made out of grapes, because it's more like that consistency. And it gives you this luscious, beautiful, fruity wine. And contrary to what most people would think, it's not a sweet wine at all.
No, it's not. Very dry.
Even though there's, you know, twice as much fruit concentrated in there. And it makes for a very, very fun wine. So if you look for either Ripasso or Amarone at your wine shop,
right,
either one of those is likely to lead you to a pretty terrific bottle of wine. Because when somebody's making this style of wine, they're not going to mess around with inferior grapes typically. It's very labor intensive. It's very costly to make it. It's not something that you want to make with junk.
And I kind of think of these styles of wine with a concentrated base in there of the dried fruit as old world wines for new world palates.
That's pretty clever, yeah.
That fruit fooled me.
Yeah, but you can see where that would compensate for the lightness that you would typically expect out of an old world wine, but this gives it a double whammy of fruit,
right,
which would make it very complicated for somebody to guess, I think.
This is a beautiful bottle. Is this something that is widely available?
I don't know how widely available it is. I had never seen this label before. But by the way, a very un-Italian label.
It is.
It's pink. You say as well. It's pink and handwritten.
Right.
But the other interesting thing about this wine is I think it retails for about $35.
No, that's a real value.
If you were to buy an Amarone, think 80 plus for a good one. This wine, about $35.
Great value.
That's a great value, isn't it?
Yeah. Beautiful wine.
Okay. And then the other thing about this is the grape itself that is in this wine, and that would be largely Corvina.
Right.
Corvina. Doesn't that sound like a little Italian sports car?
Yeah.
You want to go for a ride up the coast in my Corvina? Anyway, delicious grape.
It is.
Corvina. So we give this wine what? A rating?
I would give that a 93.
That is exactly what I gave it.
Is that true?
That is exactly what I would give it. This wine is a real treasure, I think.
Yeah.
And I've got two more opportunities to stump the Sarah in the next couple of weeks.
I hope they taste this good.
Yeah, but you know, I wasn't trying to pull one over on you, right? I think I made it very clear that this would be a hard one to guess.
You did.
It was. But actually, you did better than most people would have on that one.
Oh, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Okay, good. All right, that's going to do it for Grape Encounters Radio. That's going to do it for Sipping with Sarah. It's not going to do it. We're just going to do it again next week.
I'm for that.
Okay.
Your grape encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.